good afternoon and welcome to Saturday with Katie Hannan. Joining me this afternoon, I have Robert Troy, Minister of State for Trade Promotion, Digital and Company Regulation, Roisin Shortall, co-leader of the Social Democrats and the party spokesperson on health, Matt Carthy, Sinn Féin TD for Cavan Monaghan and spokesperson on agriculture, Paul Hackett, CEO of clickandgo.com, and public health specialist Dr. Anne Dee. Now, we want to hear what you think. So should the government reject NPHET advice twice? Should teachers be expected to continue working at level 5? And is it reckless to power ahead with the GAA inter-county matches? Text us on 51551, email saturday@rte.ie or tweet to @SaturdayRTE. So later today, the Cabinet Subcommittee on COVID is meeting to consider this latest advice from NPHET, which is, as we all know now, to move the whole country immediately to level 5 for a 6-week period. We just heard in the last hour that Dr. Tony Houlihan, Professor Philip Nolan and Dr. Ronan Glenn from NPHET have been summoned to government buildings to explain, I suppose, why they have made that recommendation. But if there is a move to level 5 in the coming days, teachers across the state will still be expected to go to work. And I'm joined on the line now by Kieran Christie, General Secretary of the ASTI. Kieran, thanks for joining us. Tell me, are teachers wrestling with this idea that schools will remain open despite the fact that the majority of people will be sent home from work, basically?
Well, certainly I can say that this weekend there's major concern. Indeed, I can be stronger than that. There's trepidation and indeed fear among teachers and students this weekend about the prospect of society moving to level 5 and schools remaining reopened. Now, for our part, we contacted the Minister for Education over a week ago. When it was mooted at that time that we would be moving to level 5, and we asked for a comprehensive review of the health guidance and supports that are being in schools to determine whether they would be adequate or appropriate in a situation where we're going to level 5, and we're renewing that call now.
And have you any indication that that's forthcoming?
Well, we certainly will be in contact again with the Minister in relation to that, and we certainly be pressing hard because the safety and the welfare of teachers and students and all members of school communities is paramount, obviously.
And, I mean, are there specific concerns that your members are raising with you?
Well, you know, schools reopened and tremendous amount of work was put into it by principals and teachers and entire school communities to ensure it was a success. But it has to be remembered that they reopened in circumstances where the numbers were a lot lower than they are now, and the community transmission was a lot less than it is now. And we're asking the question that now that there's prospects of the entirety of society to move to level 5, are the supports and are the arrangements in schools adequate given the change of situation?
You're currently balloting your members for industrial action because of safety concerns due to COVID. When will we know the results of that ballot, Kieran?
Well, as you said, the ballot is currently ongoing, and at the end of next week, that's the timeline. And what we want to be is in a position whereby we can react in an agile manner if it's necessary to do so in the context of the deterioration of the situation and if the safety of our members is in any way compromised.
So you're basically saying you want to be in a position where you could take strike action?
Well, obviously nobody wants to be in that position. We'll obviously be working hard with management and with the Department of Education not to have to take such a drastic action. But we certainly, as a trade union, want all our options open.
But do you think people will have sympathy for teachers if they go on strike in the middle of a pandemic?
Well, as I say, it would be a last resort. We certainly don't envisage that that's something that we would be jumping to, but trade unions obviously have to have all of the supports necessary to support the position of their members, and obviously we hope we don't have to go there.
Okay. Well, we will leave that there with you. That's Kieran Christie there, General Secretary of the ASTI, and I want to put that to Robert Troy, Minister. And we know the government is telling us that keeping schools open is a priority, but you can't keep schools open if the teachers aren't on board.
Yeah, well, the first thing I'd say is I want to compliment the teachers, the principals, the staff, the board of management, who put in such a huge effort to get the schools reopened. The schools have now been open since the beginning of September. Over 1 million pupils, teachers are back at school. This effort was backed up by a comprehensive suite of measures put in place by the Department of Education. And the effort and the priority of government always has been and remains is to ensure that the schools remain open for the welfare of children and because of the developmental needs of our children. We know that NPHET have sent a letter to government today. Cabinet colleagues are going to be discussing that later on today. And part of that letter, while I haven't seen it, is to ensure that the schools remain open as well. So NPHET themselves are advocating to keep the schools open because they too understand the need to have our schools open for the need of our children.
But how can you reassure teachers that they are safe in their workplace? You're asking teachers to go into classrooms with maybe 30 students, and as in some cases, and SNAs are another issue, of course, that who have to have very close contact with the students that they are charged with dealing with, when the infection rates are going in the direction they're going in the country.
Well, as I pointed out at the very beginning, there was a comprehensive suite of measures introduced, a comprehensive package, I think in the region of €650 million was made available through the Department of Education to the various schools to make the necessary changes, to introduce new practices, to change the layout of the schools, to extend classrooms, to recruit additional teachers. A whole suite of measures were introduced, and the evidence thus far is that there isn't a problem in terms of, there has been some isolated cases, and where there has been cases, public health has intervened and has directed what the next steps were. But given that we have in the region of 1 million students and teachers and SNAs back in our schools since the beginning of September, there hasn't been a huge spike in the number of cases identified.
Yeah, can I ask you, Matt Carthy, do you sense that we're heading towards a clash here with teachers?
Well, I think we're absolutely moving to further restrictions, and we're moving to a point then where people will naturally be asking questions as to why some people have to work and others don't. I'm a parent myself. To me, it's almost unthinkable that the kids are going to be taken back to their homes, because I just see and know the potential damage that would cause. But at the same time, it's crucially important that we get on top of this virus. I find it incredibly worrying that we have a teacher's representative on the radio this afternoon saying that they have sought a meeting and an engagement with the Minister and the Department of Education, and that hasn't been provided immediately. So if we're serious, and if the government are serious about wanting to keep the schools open, then there needs to be a full and almost daily engagement with the representatives of those people who are actually going to keep our schools open if we manage to do that. And that is our teachers, our principals, our board of management. And if they're saying that there are gaps, whether it be in testing, tracing, whether it be in terms of the provisions that are provided to school, the guidelines or the advice, if there are gaps, then them gaps need to be filled immediately, because otherwise we will have to move to a situation where the reclosure of schools is on the table. And as I say, I think there are parents right across the country that will be hoping against hope that that doesn't come to be the case. But so we have to make sure that we put in place the measures that we don't have to contemplate such a scenario.
Yeah, Roisin Shortall, do you think this sounds like we're heading towards a very concerning situation?
Well, Katie, I think it would be really regrettable if, you know, we get to a point where teachers are taking strike action. You have to ask, why have we got to this point? And clearly there are communication issues here. But I mean, what we need to see is the evidence in relation to schools, and I very much welcome the CMO kind of providing information on that. The fact is that there is no risk-free activity at all in the present circumstances, but it is about balancing that risk and ensuring that sufficient measures are in place to minimise the risk. And, you know, when you look at the school situation, the balancing kind of the balancing calculation has to be done in terms of risk of COVID for both students and staff. But you set that against the risk for young people in not attending school, the fact that they were out of school, they missed so much this year, the impact on their education, the impact on their welfare, the structure of their day and so on. So, you know, there has to be better communication with the Department of Education. If there are issues there, if there are further measures that need to be taken, well, they should be addressed immediately. And equally, I would say, and I think this issue hasn't been resolved satisfactorily, if there are teachers or other staff, SNAs or school secretaries, with underlying health conditions, well, then provision needs to be made for that. But it's really shocking that we are at a point where we're talking about teachers going on strike. You know, there has to be better communication from the Department of Education and the Minister.
Okay. I want to move on because the Irish Medical Organisation issued a statement urging the public to comply fully with COVID-19 restrictions, saying that another shutdown of our non-COVID healthcare services this year would be a catastrophe. And joining me now is Dr. Anne Dee, consultant in public health medicine and member of the IMO's Public Health Committee. Anne, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Katie.
Yeah, Anne, it's your job, if I understand it correctly, to source, to get to the sources of outbreaks and to manage them successfully. Can you give us a sense of what you are witnessing on the ground now at this point in the pandemic?
Okay, at this point in the pandemic, in the last 2 weeks, we have seen an enormous surge in the number of cases. It has been, I suppose, at a rate that has surprised us. We didn't expect the trajectory was upwards, but it was slowly upwards. And about 2 weeks ago, it really took off. And we know now that if we continue on this trajectory, we are really heading for some very serious problems with our health service and with our population in general. So it is hugely important at this point in time as a country that we go back to the basics, back to the beginning. We're facing another very difficult period, no matter how we look at it, and we have to make choices. And you know, if we are united, we will stand. If we are divided, we will fall. And at this point, we all need to put our shoulder to the wheel, come together and to just, you know, go back to the beginning, wearing our masks, not socialising, avoiding crowds, doing our distancing, staying at home, constantly hand hygiene. And on top of that, we just need to accept that there has to be, in order to bring this back under control, increased levels of intervention from the government.
And I think a lot of people are, I suppose, sceptical is the word about how serious the situation is in terms of health service capacity. I think because we keep watching that figure for ICU, and it has stayed stable in terms of the numbers of COVID patients that we have in ICU beds over the last number of weeks. It has kind of hovered there at the 30 mark, even though the numbers that are in our acute wards are like ticking up. And I think it was up around 240, 250 the last time I saw that number. Is there a sense that we're not seeing, or we're not going to see, as many people in our ICU wards in this second wave?
Of course, we all hope that. But I think if we look at the data, the most recent data would tell us that the COVID is now going back into the older age groups and the vulnerable groups. And so I think certainly, while because people have changed their behaviour to a degree, and it does affect the trajectory. But unfortunately, at this point, the trajectory seems to have gone out of control. And so I think that very quickly we could find ourselves in a position of not being able to cope, and of, you know, of our health services being overwhelmed and being in a similar position to what we saw maybe in Italy earlier on in the year. So
in a similar position to what we saw in Italy, like the Bergamo case, and
yeah, I mean it's not impossible. We just need to keep going the rate we're going, and the trajectory is very frighteningly upwards, and so.
In what settings are you seeing in the last couple of weeks in particular?
Well, in the last couple of weeks, we're seeing it in it's in households, it's in or associated a lot with socialising, especially in places where, you know, people are socialising and having alcohol. We're seeing it a lot. We're seeing it now coming back into the nursing homes. We're seeing it in other residential care facilities. We're seeing it in households. It's, you know, every situation you can think of. But a lot of it does go back to, you know, socialising and mixing and consumption of alcohol, it has to be said.
And when you say socialising, we're hearing a lot about sports related socialising, you know, club cups being won and having to be wet. Is that the kind of socialising you're talking about, or is it in
Absolutely.
A particular age group?
Well, absolutely. We're seeing a lot of post-match socialising. Behaviour on the field by all the sports groups has been very, very good and very controlled. But post-match, unfortunately, hasn't reflected the same level of discipline. And so those kind of things are driving the spread in the community. It's mainly social settings, but then once it gets into a vulnerable group, it will spread within that vulnerable group very quickly, and that's what we're seeing now at this point in time.
Are you able to manage it? Is it still at that level where you can, you know, hang on to it and manage it?
No, I don't think so, to be honest. Not in public health departments, and I think very shortly the health service will follow suit, the wider health service. I think we need to call a halt at this point and try and get it back under control.
Would you be saying level 5 is calling a halt? Is that where we need to go?
Absolutely, I think so, yeah.
Okay, will you stay on the line, Anne, because I'll want to... come back to you again, but I want to put that to Robert Troy. Robert, we know that meeting is happening today. We know that all the NPHET chiefs have been called in, but we're also being hearing briefings that the government is very reluctant to go to level 5. Listening to what Anne has just been telling us there, is that a very risky position to be taking at this point?
Well, I think there's no risk-free option regardless what decision is taken, there's risk associated and there's consequences associated with whatever risk or whatever decision is taken. And whatever decision is going to be taken by the ministers meeting later on this evening, and that will have to be referred on to Cabinet, they will have to balance the public health advice that's coming from NPHET. They will have to balance that with the wider health implications, with the implications of what a full lockdown would have on mental health, on wider societal impacts, and the effect that it would have on the economy. And when the 5-stage plan was published a number of weeks ago, it was published in recognition that how can we learn to coexist with this virus. We have to remember that level 3 was only introduced nationally quite recently. Where it was introduced a number of weeks ago in Dublin, the numbers haven't been rising at the same level. We have introduced a new restriction.
Yeah, but we're much higher. In relation to that, the figures in Dublin, we've been 4 weeks now at level 3 in Dublin, and where the numbers looked like they were stabilising and coming down a little after a couple of weeks, we have gone back up again, and we're at a much higher level now than we were when that level 3 restriction was introduced.
And that's why further restrictions were introduced only came effect as of yesterday in relation to the restrictions for people visiting each other in their homes, because there's an acknowledgement that a vast proportion of this spread is spread through the community and spread through social interaction. And while nobody likes to be introducing these restrictions are introduced in order to ensure that we combat this virus, that we drive the numbers down. And the only way we're going to do that, because regardless whether we're in level 2, 3, 4 or 5, the only way we're going to do that is if people continue to wear their masks, retain the required social distance, 2 metres, refrain from interacting with a large number of people, cut their contacts down and maintain etiquette in relation to coughing and sneezing. Is the best way to drive this virus figures down.
Do you have a view on this yourself? I know you did at your parliamentary party call for off licences to be closed when the country went up to level 3. Just in general, would listening to you there, and I suppose you do as Minister for Business Promotion, you have to be concerned about what moving to level 5 would do to the business community. But do you have a view yourself on this now?
Well, I think what you'll have seen from the budget this week is a comprehensive suite of measures being introduced to support businesses where, in instances where they have to be forced to close in order to protect our public health, that compensation will be paid. So that has been introduced. There's essential businesses, obviously, that will remain open and have to remain open. But we have to get to a stage where we learn to coexist with this virus. I don't believe we can have a case where we can continuously open and close down our economy, because in the long term, I don't believe that will be beneficial to the economy. And in the long term, if we don't have an economy, we won't have a health service. The health service is dependent on a functional economy, and we have to take that on board in any decision we make. And just in relation to the point that I raised at a recent parliamentary party in relation to off licences. Yes, I did make the point that given restrictions had been introduced in relation to restaurants, in relation to public houses where alcohol was being sold in a controlled and supervised environment, should we not look at the same level of restrictions to our off licences? Because the anecdotal evidence was that people were buying, I'm not talking about the person buying a bottle of wine to enjoy it with their Saturday evening meal. I'm talking about people buying large proportions of alcohol and having house parties. And that was a contributing factor. And I believe that we should look at how we could restrict that to ensure that that type of behaviour wasn't carrying on.
Were you saying we should close or just restrict the opening hours?
I said we should look at restrictions up to and possibly closure, but you know, we need to look at how we could restrict the opening hours, maybe introduce a quota system in terms of the amount of alcohol that people can buy. But we certainly need to ensure that, as so many public health experts have said, the virus loves alcohol. Alcohol is a contributing factor. And one of the one areas where there's no supervision in terms of the level of alcohol that's been sold and been taken is true and off licence and in a home environment.
Okay, I want to bring in Paul Hackett, you're a travel agent yourself. What is the feeling in the business community now?
Like when I listen to Andy talking about us getting back to Bergamo type scenarios, that really concerns me greatly. But then I listen to David Navarro from the World Health Organization, who says, stop using lockdowns as your primary control method. Mike Ryan, lockdown as a last resort. If we move through the levels, are we actually going to see a change in behaviour? And do we need to address the behavioural issues with the possible introduction of some sort of fine system that we have in other countries in Europe? I'm not talking about punitive, I'm not talking about police state, but clearly there are people who have bought into the behaviour in line with the Living with COVID framework, and there are people who have not. And just moving through the levels is not going to change that for us. So that's really important. I think we need to look at what we can control. So behaviour is possibly something we can have some, you know, influence over. And I think tracing is another area where we need to really dig deep and figure out what's going on there. Because the numbers, when I see numbers, very high percentages on community transmission, that worries me as well.
But isn't that what Dr. Anne D does? That's exactly what you're describing.
I think the level that she's operating at is the scientific level where she's, you know, looking at the strategic piece. I'm talking about the physical tracing piece.
Well, no, I think she, Anne, if you're with us still.
I'm still there, yeah. I completely agree with Paul that I think it's really important that we get to a stage where we can keep our country open and our economy open. And I think not only is the health service dependent on the economy, the economy is dependent on a healthy population. It's not a, you know, it's not kind of, they're both interdependent. I think that I completely agree that we need to have stronger public health, and there has been a lot of movement in the last couple of weeks to put additional resources into public health departments so that we can stay ahead of this and not chase it from behind. And that's very welcome. It's extremely welcome. And I think, but we, you know, that was going to, I think that...
Is it a bit late in the day though, Anne? I mean, in terms of, because I think people would have assumed that that's what would have been being done in June, July and August when the numbers
absolutely were... Absolutely, and there was a lot of planning, but it wasn't quick enough, and we have to admit that. But I think we now have to get those resources all completely in place and press the reset button. And hopefully it will be the last time we have to press the reset button.
Okay, I want to bring in Roisin. Roisin Shortall, is the country ready to go to level 5 now?
I think it'll be very difficult to bring people with the government if that is the decision over the next couple of days. There is no question but that there is a tidal wave coming towards us. And you do have to ask, you know, why is it that we find ourselves in the position that we're in now? You referenced testing and tracing. Like, I've certainly been saying from the beginning that the government is not pursuing a clear strategy. The thinking was that, you know, we would have a proper testing and tracing system and we would operate that until such time as a vaccine was developed. Now, you know, that's unlikely to happen anytime soon that we'll have a vaccine. And you have to ask then, why is the testing and tracing system so inadequate? You know, why was so much time lost over the summer? We're now in a situation where there are delays in getting the turnaround in testing. The whole question of tracing, and Andy was very articulate about this during the week. You know, we're not capable of doing that any longer because the numbers are so large. You have to ask, why is it that it's only in the last 2 weeks that there's been any moves made to try and develop an all-island approach to this issue, when that was a glaring question that had to be dealt with from an early stage? Why is it that we still haven't got any system in place at our airports and ports in terms of safeguards, either quarantining or testing? Why is that the case? And why is it still that we haven't got clear messages and we are not using influencers and other key people to target particular cohorts of people? Like, the messaging is just so confused at the moment. So all of these things need to be addressed. But whatever decision is going to be taken over the next couple of days, and it's clear that decisions do have to be taken because, it, you know, we are at that critical point. But what happens at the end of that? If it's 6 weeks or 4 weeks where there's going to be, you know, further restrictions, we don't have a strategy that will actually stand to us in the medium term. Or the long term.
Okay.
And that's a huge problem. And, you know, government hasn't been clear about this.
Okay,
it is kind of keeping your fingers crossed that the testing and tracing would somehow work out. And it's completely inadequate at the moment. And it has failed us very seriously.
OK, OK. Well, I'll put that to the minister in a moment. But Matt Carthy, I've heard yourself and your colleagues out making a lot of those points that Roisin was making there. And you've been very critical of the government response. But still sitting on the fence about what you would have done in terms of the NPHET advice that was rejected a couple of weeks ago.
I think it's really important just to remember, and because I think, you know, if you're listening to the minister and to government officials, you would forget that we got on top of this virus. People did what was asked of them. We had a lockdown in March that went off on for several weeks into months. We essentially reached a point where we were at zero COVID. Throughout that period of time, questions were put by people like Mary Lou McDonald, like Roisin, like David Cullen and Louise O'Reilly in relation to the testing and tracing framework and the need to ensure that when we came out of lockdown that the measures were in place. What happened when we came out of lockdown? The testing and tracing provisions were actually wound down. We saw the closure of test centres. When outbreaks did occur in people in places like meat factories, the government was more concentrated on trying to ensure the secrecy of what was happening in those places as opposed to actually getting on top of them really quickly, to an extent that they allowed three counties to actually go into further restrictions rather than live up to their failures. So I think we're at a point now, and just to go back to your original question, where we are undoubtedly going to face increased restrictions. Whether that be level 4 or level 5 will be a decision for government on the basis of the full information from Netflix.
Should we have done that 2 weeks ago?
But see, this is the point I'm making. If we are to do that, two things need to happen. First of all, we need to put in place supports today for those people who are going to be financially impacted on it. But secondly, we have to give people the assurances that if we're asking them to make further sacrifices, that we're not going to make the same mistake. We're not going to come out of another set of restrictions to still have a testing and tracing system that isn't fit for purpose. We still have deficiencies in our health services. So the two things that need to happen is we need to do things like restoring the PUP. We need to ensure that people know that there's actually supports in place for them. But secondly, we have to make sure that...
Do we need to be calling off the GA intercounty season now?
Well, again, that's a decision that needs to be made on... If the GA...
This is the problem that we... Yourself and your colleagues in Sinn Féin are very critical of the decision making and the lack of decision making on the government side. But impossible to get you to pin you down and make a call on any of the tougher decisions that are going to have to be made.
No, I'll tell you, if there is evidence that GAA matches taking place this weekend are going to lead to increase in cases or going to pose a public health risk, then they should be cancelled. I don't have that evidence. So if the government have that evidence, then they need to make that call. But crucially, and this is, we can't just tell people not to have GAA matches, not to open their business, not to go to work, not to meet with their elderly relatives, and not have a plan in place as to when and how we reach a point where we don't need to put in place those restrictions. And it goes back to the simple set of procedures that we all agreed, apparently, okay, back in March and April, that we need to have a testing and tracing and isolation system that's in place, that's actually very very easy to understand, okay, and where people who make failures are accountable for those failures.
I'll put that to the minister. I just want to ask Anne, as I have you, Anne, the GAA intercounty season. Would you have a view on that as to whether it's advisable to allow that to continue at this stage?
Okay, I think sport is hugely important, and I think that the matches as they're being, and the training and the matches as it's being performed currently, is in a very controlled environment, but we're not seeing the same level of discipline post-match. And so I think that if we can have sport without the celebrations and without the social aspect that happens afterwards, then that would be great. If we can't, we're going to have to think again about being able to have sport. But I think sport is so important, and especially for young people. I think it would be really good to try and keep as much of it going as possible, but I think maybe those big matches especially are not maybe not helpful from a public health point of view.
Okay, and I want to go back to the minister now, Robert Troy. That point that Roisin was making and Matt Carthy was making there, the complete absence of a medium or long term strategy here beyond cases are going up and we must lock down again.
Well, that's factually not true. Like, I mean, the talk about contact tracing and as if there was no contact tracing taking place. This week alone, there was north of 103,000 tests carried out, 64,000 in our community, 21,000 in hospitals, 18,000 across serial testing in our meat factories, our food plants, our residential
Dr. Tony Holland said it is now at a level where it is beyond, it's out of control, it's beyond the capacity of any contact tracing setup to cope with it.
Well, and I want to pay a compliment to the people who are working in the contract tracing facilities, the people who are working across the 46 labs who are doing invaluable work. But the difficulty is, and we have to come back to it, the difficulty is when you're making a call and the person that you're calling is contact, has been in close contact with multiples of people, that obviously complicates the thing further and makes the problem worse. What we have to come back to, unfortunately, is, and people may not like to hear it, we have to come back to an element of personal responsibility where we have to reduce significantly the level of interaction and the level of close contacts that we have with people. And I'd remind Matt when he talks about what they were advising. What they were advising a few weeks ago, Mary Lou MacDonald, at a time when Dublin was bordering on entering level
maybe
3.
Maybe answer the question,
They were advising to open up the pubs across the length and breadth of this country. So, like, I mean, it's very easy to be populist, but difficult decisions has been taken over the last number of months, and difficult decisions will continue to be taken. We have announced a winter
plan. Okay, I just want to let Roisin in because she's been trying to get in there. Roisin.
Yeah, look, Robert is describing the problem rather than addressing it. The fact is that the system hasn't been properly resourced, the testing and tracing system. There was serious complacency that set in over the summer months. That was important time where we should have been gearing up in order to be ready for the second wave, which was generally viewed as being inevitable. Now, the fact of the matter is that we are in a situation now where the main plank of the government's plan is not working any longer. And, you know, we do have to take decisions now, difficult decisions to break the chain of transmission at this critical point. But we do need a proper strategy. When we come out of that crisis situation, we need a strategy. And like I have been asking Micheál Martin for several months now to consider sitting down with other party leaders in order that we can agree a strategy. Like the best way to deal with the virus should not be a matter for political conflict or disagreement. It should be based on the evidence and it should be based on what has worked well in other countries. And some of these things, as I say, have been glaring problems that haven't been addressed. Like, what do we do about the situation with Northern Ireland? How can we work closer with the authorities there? What do we do at our airports? And how can we now quickly resource the testing and tracing? But like overall strategy, you'd have to say that we must be setting out a very clear plan in order to drive down the numbers and keep them down. Okay. We need to aim for near elimination of this virus.
Okay, we're going to go to a break now, but we will be back to discuss enforcement and airport testing after these.
Tweet at Saturday RTE.
And you can text at 51551, and we have been getting reaction to our discussion so far. Are the teachers' unions advocating the closure of supermarkets, garages, creches? Are the teachers prepared to go on the PUP? I would guess no, says one texter. Katie, all of the GAA football matches should be called off. We are in an emergency crisis with this virus and the cases are rising big time, says Deirdre in Kells in County Meath. Off licences in supermarkets are the real problem. Trolley loads very easy to control like they still do on a Sunday morning. Fully closed for 2 weeks for a start, says another texter. And Katie, Dr. Anne D is absolutely right. The house is on fire. Time to stop the debate about where to point the hose. Time is now of the essence. That's from Ivan Perry, who's public health in UCC. Now, I want to move on to... Oh, Minister, I cut you off there just before the break. You wanted to respond to Roisin and Matt there.
Thanks, Katie. Well, just to make the point that there is regular contact between this government and the executive in Northern Ireland. There's regular contact between the Taoiseach, the First Minister, the Deputy First Minister, the two respective ministers for health.
But we don't have a coherent all-island policy, Minister.
Between the two is... Well, we have to acknowledge that we are two different jurisdictions, and we have to acknowledge the sensitivities that exist in one jurisdiction in relation to how we deal with this. But in acknowledging that, there has been a memorandum of understanding signed, and there is and remains constant contact between the CMO for Republic of Ireland and the CMO in Northern Ireland, and constant contact between the respective health ministers to ensure that where it is possible, that as much collaboration can be obtained.
But we're still not doing the most basic thing is cross-border contact tracing, and that is not still happening.
And in relation to the contact tracing here in our own jurisdiction, the six-day turnaround between the 6th and the 12th of October, all contact tracing completed within 2 days. So it's wrong for Roisin to say that this is not working. She blames air travel, which contributes to 2% of the overall cases also. So some of her information is factually incorrect.
OK, well, you mentioned air travel there, and I want to move on to that because, of course, Ireland, along with the rest of the EU member states, have signed up to this new traffic light travel system. The Cabinet will have to decide, I think, on Tuesday how to implement it because there is what emerged after that meeting last week in Brussels is that there is no harmonised European approach to this, to the testing and the quarantining at our airports. Paul, you're obviously following this very, very closely. It's vital for your industry.
Totally. Like, not just our industry. Like, it's the single biggest Indigenous employer in terms of inbound tourism, the domestic tourism market, outbound tourism, 350,000 people. Owners of those businesses anxious about retaining their staff and doing everything they possibly can. So it is hugely important that we take an adult approach to how we manage this. We rely on 20 million tourists per year coming into this country. Now, yes, we're in a crisis. But what we want to do is look at the way in which we can reintroduce travel in a safe environment, in a COVID negative environment, as we possibly can.
Were you very disappointed with what emerged out of Europe last week?
Well, traffic lights by their very nature change colour. And I think, you know, it was indicative of, you know, a total kicking the can down the road scenario with what happened with the traffic lights. The traffic light system is just not going to work because the position can move too quickly. So green goes to orange, goes to red. And how we even have grey in there is beyond a joke. What we need to have is we need to have pre-departure airport testing in the airports so that passengers who are travelling feel confident and safe that they're on an aircraft with other COVID negative people. They're travelling to a destination. The destination is aware that they're COVID negative. And when we have guests coming into Ireland, those 20 million people, they're not going to come back next year. They're going to come back in smaller numbers, we hope. But we want them to come back and we want them to arrive in a COVID negative, in a test environment that, where they've had a test pre-departure.
I see the Irish Times reporting today that the state here is beginning to test these new rapid COVID-19 antigen kits. And they could roll them out nationwide by the end of the year. I mean, that would be a game changer, wouldn't it?
It would totally be a game changer. And what's happening at present is that they're testing antigen alongside PCR to test the validity so that they're trying to, you know, inform the community and build confidence with everybody, not just the people who are travelling, but us as a community who are going to be here welcoming these people when they come into the country. You know, our airports, our aviation sector, our hotel sector are reliant on this. Like, these are 350,000 real jobs. Everybody in this country is anxious about COVID, but it's quite a divided pandemic in terms of everybody feels that anxiety, but layer on top of that the economic piece when you have job insecurity, when you have job cuts, when you're lying awake at night trying to think, how do I sustain my business? How do I retain my staff? So from that point of view, we have to be quite open-minded as to how we achieve this, but it has to be based on testing. And that's the solution. The traffic lights won't result in what we need to happen.
Okay, let me put that to the Minister. You know, Minister, trade promotion is your brief. You must be concerned about what's happening with connectivity in relation to this. Will this be rolled out? And when will it be rolled out?
I'm very concerned. And as we know that there is an essential travellers list that facilitates essential workers to travel right now. That's important to keep our supply chains open, etc., and to ensure that essential workers in the medical profession and else can travel. But we do need to open up our travel industry again. It's critically important from a tourism perspective, from a trade perspective. And while the traffic light system may have some drawbacks, the benefit of what was agreed earlier this week in the General Affairs Council in Luxembourg is that it will enable each individual country to determine what they're going to do in when the states are orange and red. And I welcome the fact, and it's something that I had suggested to Minister Donnelly early, is for the need to ramp up the testing for the antigen tests, because I do believe that will be a game changer. It will enable us to roll out pre-travel tests and will enable us to open up what is, in my mind, a very important industry.
Well, a very important industry. Yeah, but the aviation industry, very important, and they get paid a lot of lip service, but they themselves out last week saying that they feel they were demonised and abandoned, basically, by the government.
Well, we are a member of the European Union. I think we do have to look at this in a cross European perspective, and that has happened. An agreement was reached, as I said, on Tuesday gone in the General Affairs Council. It's now down to each respective government to police their own jurisdiction and to come forward with proposals in terms of how they will deal in a scenario where people are travelling from orange or red regions. Obviously, in a green region, there's no travel restrictions, but in areas of orange
and also there's no
red,
green region right now.
No, Katie, like...
Unfortunately, because the pandemic is not only increasing in Ireland, it's increasing right across Europe. But
Paul wants to come in there, Minister.
Katie, the traffic lights are not going to work. There is no harmonisation. So there is no consumer confidence. What we've got to understand is travel is not all about leisure. Travel is leisure. It's corporate travel. It's the IDA. It's Enterprise Ireland. It's foreign direct investment. It's all of that, as well as visiting friends and relatives, the non-nationals who live here getting to their family's getting into them. You know, the only way that we're going to see this is removal of quarantine and the introduction of testing. And it's available. The DAA have said they can do it. Dalton Phillips sat in front of the Oireachtas committee the other week and made a proposition. It's sitting with the Department of Transport. This needs to get implemented, because we go back to the other points. We need the economy to feed our health service, to feed our social welfare service, to feed our education system. And we've got to understand the interconnectivity here.
Okay. And I want to leave that there and move on, because you mentioned this earlier yourself, Paul. You said we need to introduce fines like they have in other jurisdictions, and that this would have an impact. And of course, we know the government are considering introducing fines for some breaches of COVID measures and regulations, at least. But we also know that the policing authority says that more stringent enforcement powers aren't what's needed right now. And I'm joined on the line by Dr. Vicky Conway, a member of the policing authority and associate professor of law DCU. Vicky, why do you think increased powers aren't what's needed right now?
So the oversight body, the Policing Authority, has been engaged in very intensive oversight of how the guards are implementing the powers that they have had. We produced our 8th report this week to the Minister, where we're clear that extensive new powers are not a panacea. I mean, I think the really obvious answer is Northern Ireland has had a fine system since this began, as has the rest of the UK. And there is really very little evidence that fines are a good way to influence people's behaviour, and that, you know, is it really going to produce the kind of outcomes that we want? And if we look at how the guards have been policing COVID to date, they've been very clear. There are 4 E's: engage, encourage, explain and enforce, and with enforcement as a last resort. And that has had really very positive results in many, many spaces. Another side to this for the police is the fact that throughout COVID, domestic violence, child abuse, cybercrime have risen quite drastically. And the feedback that the policing authority is getting from the agencies that work in those spaces, particularly around sexual and domestic violence, is that the approach, the tone, the attitude that the guards have brought to that has been an absolute game changer. And we're in a really new space in the policing of those crimes. And tone and attitude is really important. And if we try to push more towards an enforcement position, that is going to have other consequences for society.
But when we saw what happened when Operation Fanacht was reintroduced there in the last couple of weeks, and those huge, huge long traffic jams on the M50 and elsewhere around the country, that can't really be considered an effective way of persuading and encouraging people to support public health measures.
Well, I think arguably it does, because if you take the point that, you know, the first time around people did start to, we saw that initially, and we saw that ease because people learned to regulate their behaviour. And that presence, the Commissioner called it the persuasive influence of the Garda presence. The simple authority of them being at those points is a very visceral and reminder to people.
It's pretty visceral if you're 2 hours late for work or for your medical appointment, or, you know. I'm just wondering, in terms of, I know that, and if you talk to people out there anecdotally, you know that the same people are the people who obey all the rules all the time. And those people are infuriated when they see those who don't seem to have any heed of the rules. And so I'm talking about people who are throwing the house parties, having the dues, you know, not wearing masks in places where they should. And they're wondering, well, what is there to support us, the people abiding by the rules, and ensuring that other people are doing the right thing as well to keep us all safe?
Absolutely. But I suppose the evidence from the UK is quite clear that fines are not going to provide that answer. One of the things that the authority has pointed out is a need for graduated and consistent responses from An Garda Síochána, that there have been some issues. So we have reported that young people do not feel that they've been treated the same as others. We've reported that that there are concerns around large gatherings, around house parties, around demonstrations, and we work to ensure that there is a consistent response from One Garda Síochána, because when they are using those levels properly with enforcement as a last resort, I mean, we know, we've identified that One Garda Síochána have conducted 70,000 checkpoints since this began in March, and only 600 enforcement orders have come as a result of
that. Vicky, we're nearly out of time. I just want to give the Minister a chance to respond to that. And just wondering, will the government take that advice and that line from the policing authority on board when they're considering this now?
Well, I think what we have to remember, Katie, is that, you know, 90+% of people are compliant. And you look at the people who are wearing their masks, 90+% of people are compliant with public health advice. What we're trying to do is bring forward measures that will ensure the people who are not compliant, that there is a proportionate mechanism to enforce them to become compliant. And one of the things that is being looked at currently between the Department of Justice and Health is proportionate fines. I personally felt, and I said it at a parliamentary party meeting recently, that the traffic jams that were created a number of weeks ago actually were counterproductive, because the people who they affected the most were the people who were actually coming or going to work, essential workers going to work on the front line that were actually made late for work or actually delayed getting home in the evening, and that had counterproductive from my perspective.
But what am I hearing, Minister, from what you're saying there, is that the intention is still, and there is still support, you think, in government for ploughing ahead with introducing what you're calling their proportionate fines.
I understand that the Department of Justice and Health are working on proportionate fines, and I believe that something needs to happen. I spoke to a guard who was on duty in Cavan a number of weeks ago. He was on the line of duty. The number of people he met and was saying, you know, you really shouldn't be travelling when asked why were you going or where were you going, you know, you really shouldn't be travelling. Did he hadn't the power to tell them to turn around. He could encourage them to turn around, but perhaps if he had the power to issue them with €100 fine or thereabouts, they might be more willing to turn around.
Okay, we're going to have to leave there because we are over time, and I do have to read this statement we've just got in from the Department of Education. The Department of Education has ongoing engagement with the education partners, including the teachers' unions, on sustaining the safe opening of schools, with regular meetings, most recently last Tuesday. This engagement will continue as the input of all partners in education is valued and underpins the approach taken by the department at all times, including in the roadmap for reopening schools. And that's it. We are out of time. I want to thank all my panel. I want to thank you all for listening. Enjoy the rest of the weekend. I'll be back with you with Late Debate on Tuesday night.
Saturday with Katie Hannan. Listen back on the RTE Radio Player app.